I think you can kiss 1.5 goodbye.
Okay.
My honest opinion.
Yeah.
I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
There's no final whistle, you know? So you have to keep on negotiating.
Yeah.
This is the Go Maluku podcast.
All right. What's good, everyone? Ghazal Noel here. New episode of Go Maluku podcast. Well, it's not a COP28 debrief, but it's... In a way, it is, but it's not like quickly after COP28.
Sure.
But I think like still it's good to have like a reflection of the meeting itself and also, yeah, but primarily focusing on the next steps. What are the things that need to be done before the next SUPSTA meeting in Bonn.
Yep.
And definitely in before we go to Azerbaijan, Baku.
Yeah.
Have you already like checked out the flights?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not a very, let's say, big city, for example, where it's easily accessible for a lot of us. I mean, at least from Europe, it's not so bad, but I know from other parts of the world, the way into Azerbaijan is very limited.
Right.
But it's a very how do I put it, exotic destination for a climate change conference, let alone any international conference. So so I'm kind of looking forward to it.
You are
always okay. You know, different contexts. You know, when COP happens, and you know, there's always there's a venue and there's outside world.
Right.
And whether inside the venue is very much the same. You know, if you look at the plenary hall, it's basically the same everywhere.
Right.
The COP goes.
It's like a circus. It's a traveling circus.
Yeah. You know, if you look at the COP plenary, you wouldn't know where the COP is being held.
No.
Because everything looks exactly the same.
Right.
But again, like when you walk out at 11 o'clock and look at the life outside, that's when you start to see a little bit of like a, I don't know, like a. Like a feeling hours. I don't know. That's how I put it. Like, you know, because you go out, when we were in Sharm and we got out, it was middle of nowhere.
Right.
And then you kind of, the journey back to the hotel is just staring out the window of deserts and ocean.
If you can see it.
Yeah. If you can see it.
Cause it's dark.
Yeah. But in Dubai, it's like, you know, you're going through a massive, like city with
high rises
and apartments, so it gives you a different kind of vibe.
Right.
But anyway, that's the future. Future COP in Azerbaijan.
Right.
Another oil and gas country.
Right.
Which is something that we can perhaps talk about. To what extent, you know, COP being hosted by petrostates really affect how things go? But maybe this is just this will be a hypothetical discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's get back to, you know, the results, right?
Well,
you had the targets or the position or goal, so to put it, so that you can measure at the end how close the decisions were to the goals that the indigenous peoples have set for themselves.
Well, definitely, like before you go to COP, like you set out objectives and key results that you want to achieve.
Yeah.
And that depends. For each work stream or negotiating stream, for sure.
Yep.
I think when it comes to the Article 6 and loss and damage was mostly done, but we'll talk about it in a little bit.
Yeah.
I think like it's getting it right. You know, it's getting the right language in there in the right way, getting indigenous people's participation in there.
Yep.
Definitely this whole emerging indigenous knowledge.
Yeah.
Traditional knowledge, local knowledge.
Yeah.
Trying to get that the right way in there so that it doesn't do us harm, so that it won't hurt us.
Yeah.
So I think that going into COP, like that is, that's like the main things actually.
But tell me a little bit more about, you know, getting indigenous people's rights into the right context. Can it be, because I think traditionally or in the past, we might have looked at the success of our advocacy by looking at, you know, just the quantity of the indigenous people's rights in the text.
Yeah.
Right? The more the better. But is it how much your thoughts have changed?
No, it's not that? It's not it's definitely not quantity, yeah. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Like it's the quality of it, the context of it, the objective of it.
Yeah.
So it hasn't changed a lot in terms of like how I started to approach negotiations in general, definitely in the COP context.
Yeah.
So basically what I do is all right, so what's up on the table? Is there space to expand?
Uh-huh.
Does things need to be fine-tuned, outlined better? You look at that, but it's not like, all right, oh, they talk about participation in there, so like let's add the word indigenous in there. Because you look at the package, you look at the objective of that particular paragraph or the cluster. So, and there were some occurrences at COP that I was like, all right, guys, I know there's indigenous knowledge in there in the text. However, zoom out.
Yeah.
Look at the objective of the paragraph, which is very detrimental to indigenous people's rights.
Yeah.
So like having this reference to indigenous peoples in there or indigenous knowledge in there will only actually like enable that particular paragraph. So those are the things that you want to avoid. So you go through very meticulously, you go through the paragraph, through the negotiated texts and you look at, all right, so what is it missing, and if they are doing something, for example, about projects and everything else, then all right, FPIC.
Yeah.
Then an alarm bell or like a light bulb should go off, right? Let's see if we can make any reference to FPIC or international standards. So FPIC, ideally, and at the minimum, international standards.
Yeah. But I just want to kind of dig deeper. I know that, you know, we have some flows that to keep in line with.
No, go ahead.
But you know, when I feel that the parties are often very uncomfortable when they see new languages.
Oh yeah.
Right. So we talk about indigenous people's rights, and FPIC is always a difficult thing to put in because it hasn't been in a negotiating text of any UN documents or negotiating text. And what they do is they say, instead of putting a new language, we want to put in the preamble paragraph 11 of the Paris Agreement. And I'm just going to read it out so we have some ideas. So in the Paris Agreement, there's a preamble paragraph which states that, in acknowledging that climate change is a common concern of humankind, parties should, when taking action to address climate change, respect, promote, and consider their respective obligations and human rights, the rights to health, the rights of indigenous peoples, local communities, migrants, children, persons with disabilities, and peoples in vulnerable situations, and the right to development, as well as gender equality, empowerment of women, and intergenerational equity.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about this paragraph, because is it satisfactory for indigenous peoples when that happens? When the party just say, let's just put in preamble paragraph 11?
No, but it's a fallback.
Yeah.
It's the fallback of both indigenous peoples as well as parties, because it's agreed language.
Yeah.
Because that's well.
Yeah.
It's in Paris, ideally from indigenous people's perspective, we wanted to have the rights of indigenous peoples in Article 2 of the objective of the Paris Agreement.
Yeah.
Obviously, for 99% of the Paris negotiations, it was in there, and then the 1%, the final percent, it got dropped, and then we got as a band-aid, we got a preamble paragraph, which is like a catch-all paragraph, because the whole is a list of groups, interest groups, and objectives.
Yeah. Rights holders, you might say.
Yeah. So there's a preamble paragraph of rights holders, and we got the platform instead. Yeah. You know, so the promise of Paris was all right. Yeah, we got it in the preamble, but like in the rule book, we're going to operationalize it.
Yeah.
So it's a way of like kicking the can further down the road. You know, like, all right. So we can't agree to it right now. Mm. However. Hopefully things will change further down the line. So let's put it in there. So as a placeholder, so you can like it's like in a refrigerator, right? Yeah. You know, like, so whenever you're hungry, you know, you pull it out, you make something out of it, and you put it in Arco 6, you put it in GGA, you put it in agriculture. Yeah. Like, so that's a little bit how we're treating Paris Preamble 11.
Yeah.
Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Mm. Is it ideal? Absolutely not. Mm. But it's something I want to work with.
Yeah.
So instead of like always gravitating towards it, what I'll always try to do is it's trying to push the boundaries, you know? Yeah. Like, so like it's, you always try to reference to the rights of indigenous peoples.
Yeah.
Or FPIC even, you know? Yeah. So you do that, you try to do that. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, there's always PP11. Mm. And they cannot go below PP11 because that's rigid language, you know?
But it's still very much considered their respective obligations. So it's another way of saying national circumstances.
It sounds perfect because obligations is like within the UN context is like treaty language.
Yeah.
But within the UNCCC context is different. And also like it's still, since Paris, there have been changes. For example, we're not capitalizing INDP and indigenous peoples. Mm. And that is not in the Paris, in the Paris preamble. Mm. So, which is kind of like some parties use it as a political politicize it. Mm. We are just making an editorial issue out of it.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, no, it's not a political issue. Yeah. It's a editorial because like the UN is doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So, so it's what you try to do is you make subtle but significant steps.
Yeah.
And and the Paris is a good like. Is whenever you go into a trampoline, it's like a trampoline, you know, like it's, you can't go below that.
Yeah. All right, then, since we're talking about the Paris Agreement, let's talk about Article 6, because like everybody...
Well, you don't want to talk about loss and damage because it was...
Well, you know, because let's say, you know, the Paris Agreement is the Article 6 is the last puzzle, right? Last missing piece.
But loss and damage was... The one thing that I started with at COP, right?
Yeah. So you want to go with loss and damage?
I think that is what surprised many is that like, it was like the first deliverable of COP. Didn't even start, you know. So it's
then let's start with loss and damage then, because you know, we knew that before it happened, that the gavel dropped. We knew that was going to be adopted as is. And we probably knew that. We also had some information.
Define we.
You know, people who were in the room at the TC, TC5, let's put it that way.
The transitional committee.
Yeah, the last meeting of the Loss and Damage Fund negotiation. Okay, let's say...
You're not talking about Indigenous peoples in general, right?
Like So when I say we, you know, we are talking about the team who has been following, you know, the Loss and Damage negotiation. And so we and few others knew that this was going to happen.
Yeah. Right?
This is, you know, the gavel's gonna, as soon as the COP opened, the first agenda item, loss and damage, pretty much.
Which actually wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Because it's not a soft item.
No. But it was a COP item.
It was
a CMA item.
It's
right?
CMA item. Like, so like the first thing they opened the plenary.
Yeah.
And let's adopt loss and damage fund. Yeah. And I think like the whole idea was, let me do it like this. So the whole idea was
to create a momentum.
Right? Create momentum, get pledges in before, you know, I think that was the whole idea why they did what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so you want to talk a little bit about the outcome?
Obviously it's a joke. If you think about it, loss and damage fund, it needs, I don't know, a gazillion US dollars, and it only like 700 million US dollars in pledges so far. Yeah. Doesn't seem like a lot more will come in.
And, no, not at this point, no.
And like, and then there's the US was so funny. Like, I can't remember what it was, like 17 million.
Subject to
Congress approval.
Yeah.
You know, some of these pledges. Yeah. So it's,
But I think the last edition when the US was really trying to say, well, you know, the funds should not just come from developed countries, but also from diverse sources.
Right.
Right. So it's not just as parties, but they are actually trying to.
Which brings us back to like the final moments of the TC5 meeting,
right,
where the United States tried to provide some brackets, or not brackets, but some concerns, some reservations with a particular paragraph.
Yeah. They don't want it to give any understanding within a text that would oblige them to put the money in a fund,
even though it's voluntary.
Right.
And then there's a footnote.
Right.
And still, like, they were like, no, right, we don't want it. We have a problem with that.
Yeah.
So 700 million is definitely not enough. However, what people should know is that it's not an outcome of negotiations at COP.
Right.
It's been like a year long negotiations.
Yeah.
Members of the transitional committee.
Yeah.
Civil society like had a, and then these people had like a hard time.
In a very savvy corner of UNFCCC, happening in was it Egypt and Singapore?
And Abu Dhabi. Dominican Republic. Yeah.
Which makes it really hard for observers to follow.
You need to have the resources.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that should be a warning to these people as well. Yeah. I raised that earlier on as well, is that decisions are not being made anymore at SUPSTA and at COP.
Yeah.
It's about, definitely at COP, it's about dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Yeah.
The bulk of the work is done intersessionally. So that's something that you need to be aware of.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I'm from Indigenous people's point of view, like in terms of eligibility, is mostly developing countries. So Indigenous peoples in developed countries, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You know, like so you're out of everything.
Yeah.
But
what was that? What was the key points for Indigenous peoples to consider looking at the decision text?
Averting loss and damage, which is now like more part of Santiago Network.
Right.
And having a seat at the board, this is what Indigenous people wanted.
Yeah.
Eligibility, so that Indigenous people from all over the world, just developing countries, but also developed countries, are able to access the fund. Like a window or a sub fund for Indigenous people, something along those lines. But it's, well, we got none of those.
Yeah.
I think like what I wanted to touch on is like people are focusing on funds, but we also need to look at the funding arrangements.
Yeah.
And that is something that you need to look at, and there are several paragraphs in the decision text that really need to be operationalized. So for example, when it comes to loss and damage projects, activities, there's a paragraph in there that allows the participation. Well, in that sense, that it needs to be in line with FPIC, your rights of Indigenous people. So like, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done before this whole thing becomes operational.
Yeah.
Obviously, the World Bank is the host of the fund.
Yeah.
So that brings some challenges with it as well.
Yeah.
So it's quite a number of things that we need to, while the board hasn't met yet, what these people should be doing is, all right, go through all these paragraphs, provide a concept note, all right, how do we see it, and how can the board operationalize these particular paragraphs in a way that it respects the rights of Indigenous peoples and ensures the participation of Indigenous peoples.
Yeah.
So that in a nutshell is something what I want to touch on when it comes to loss and damage fund.
So essentially it's, there has to be a whole kind of mechanisms and processes that has to be established in order for funds to be, funds are operationalized, but in order for the funds to be distributed in the way that has safeguards and other important requirements for Indigenous peoples.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the punchline is like we're not there yet.
Right. Yeah.
There's a fund. 700 million is an insult to a lot of people, definitely.
Yeah.
But like it's do not focus on that, but actually like also focus on what still needs to be happening.
Yeah.
There is a decision text.
Yeah.
And that needs to be operationalized.
Yeah.
So that is something that I think that we as Indigenous people need to be focusing on.
It's not over yet.
No, absolutely not.
It's not over yet. Right.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the first thing that was adopted quite earlier on.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the gangs, the Subster, SBI, and Observer gangs went to work on the first week.
Right.
And obviously, there were lots of agenda items. I mean, I feel like agenda items are expanding every year. But this year, the most important agenda items were, let's say, global stock take and Article 6 and maybe global golden adaptation and just transition. But let's talk.
Santiago was there as well.
Santiago there, yeah.
Yeah.
But which one do you want to talk about next in the order of things?
Yeah, I think definitely Article 6.
All right.
But I think like quickly on Santiago, it's they have the hosts right now.
Yeah.
So that's done. But in terms of like Santiago Network has an advisory board.
Yeah.
And these people have a seat on it.
Yeah.
So it's for these people definitely it's now similar to the loss and damage fund funding arrangements.
Yeah.
And these people now need to provide concept notes on like how to operationalize these particular two paragraphs into this Sharm el-Sheikh decision text that actually talks about operationalizing or ensuring that all the expertise, the advice that is in conjunction with the rights of Vietnamese people, so that is respects the rights of Vietnamese peoples. I think that is something that we need to be doing.
Well, why was it easier for Indigenous peoples to get a seat at the Santiago but not at the Loss and Damage Fund board?
I think the short answer is there's no money involved.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's a short answer. The longer answer is that, well, IPs are much more affiliated to averting loss and damage.
Yeah.
Instead of like paying for loss and damages.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I think that is why it was. Yeah, it could be that is why it was easier. Yeah. I wouldn't say that it was easy. That was a fight
right,
as well.
Right.
It's
always less harder than easier. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a seat on the fund. So some might be interested in it, and some people might not be interested in it because there's no funding involved.
Yeah.
Or like there's no money involved.
Yeah.
So that is also like something when it comes. So to like close out the whole loss and damage package, that's what Santiago achieved so far as well.
Yeah. All right, then we can move on to Article 6. I just said earlier that, you know, Article 6 is one of the last open agenda items, so to say, of the Paris Agreement. Everything else like NDCs and Enhanced Transparency Framework, they all kind of concluded their work and now they've been operationalized according to schedule. But Article 6,
right? Well,
is the key piece of
it's the final
puzzle.
Final piece of the puzzle of the Paris rule book.
Without which, I guess 1.5 is not possible according to the framer of the agreement.
according
to the framer of the agreement.
Right. Well, we can get to that when we do a stock take.
Yeah.
Definitely, it is one of one of the pillars of that Paris Agreement in terms of
So here's a little test for you, right? So over the last let's say 5 or 6 years, we're trying to understand what Article 6 really is about.
Right.
Right. There are three key paragraphs in there that has its own kind of work stream for Article 6. So Ghazali, I'm going to test you. Right. Explain to us. In a very simple way, Article 6 of the Paris Agreement.
Right. So, first of all, Article 6 is about how countries can help each other in terms of reducing carbon emissions.
Right.
That is the idea.
Yeah.
So if that is the framework, the premise, then like the objective, then you have like three ways to get to it. Mm. So international cooperation, what's it called, Article 6, and they have three ways to do it.
Yeah.
One is like bilaterally helping each countries helping each other achieving their NDCs with a carbon credit mechanism.
Yeah.
So that's 6.2.
Yeah.
Another way is countries helping each other in terms of generating credits and sustainable development projects. Mm. And the outcomes of those are both projects as well as 6.4 emission reductions, which are their credits.
Yeah.
So that's number two.
Yeah.
And then there's the third one is a non-market approach.
Yeah.
So one and two are market approaches.
Yeah.
So 6.2 and 6.4 are market approaches.
Yeah.
6.8 is a non-market approach.
Yeah.
And that is actually as the purest form of international cooperation. It's like, all right, how can the two of us, how can I share my information with you or my knowledge with you so that we can help each other reduce our carbon emissions?
Yeah.
So that is 6.2, 6.4, and 6.8. And that is in general an explanation of that.
I might also add that 6.4 establishes a market where not just the countries, but also the companies
and, private sector,
and other entities can also engage in,
right,
with the under the supervision of the UN mechanism,
right.
So I think that gives us a little bit of leeway into 6.4 discussion, which I think we have been following the longest out of the three.
Right.
Because it is important that UN establishes a market that is transparent and that is highly, it's a bit vague to say highly robust, because oftentimes it's a word that gets thrown around, but a lot of people don't seem to understand it. So what does for example, a robust carbon mechanism mean for indigenous peoples? What does it mean to, what would be a vision for that?
Well, there are two thoughts when it comes to this Article 6 thing.
Yeah.
One is that it's a false solution.
Right.
Like for a lot of some of these people see it as a false solution.
Yeah.
It's not actually reducing carbon emissions. It is actually just shoving around credits.
Yeah.
And also it's a dangerous one as well.
Yeah.
So that's one school of thought.
Yeah.
There's another school of thought, which is like, all right, carbon emissions, carbon markets.
Yeah.
And these peoples have lands or have land rights and everything else.
Yeah.
We want to participate in it.
Yeah.
So like the two schools of thought.
Yeah.
So in the middle of it is us.
Yeah.
Actually, at the international level.
Yeah.
Which is regardless of if you're pro or against, there needs to be like human rights safeguards in there. That the rights of indigenous peoples are always protected.
Yeah.
That indigenous peoples can participate. Mm. That there's a obligation for example on a 6.4 for project developers to continuously seek consultations or consent from indigenous peoples concerned, and there's a grievance mechanism at the back end of it. You know, so those are the three things that we focus on when it comes to this market mechanism. Again, regardless if you like want to participate in or in it, or if you're 100% against it.
So removal is basically a word used in the Paris Agreement. Well, not the Paris Agreement. The word used in carbon markets to describe how countries can reduce emission by removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and there are several ways to do that. The two ways, which has been discussed quite often in the negotiation, is nature-based removal, which is like forests and oceans and what already exists in the nature, which allows carbon to be absorbed and reintroduces oxygen in the atmosphere. And the second is a tech-based removal, which is using technologies to capture carbon and store it for a certain period of time. But they still don't have a definition for this because the guideline is not adopted.
Mm-hmm.
But so the role of the supervisory body right now is to understand and issue a guidance to the countries and companies that want to participate in the carbon market for removal. What counts as a removal activity, right? And how the removal should be implemented or should be operationalized in different contexts. And in Sharm, this particular piece of guidance was rejected, and it was sent back to the supervisory body, which was drafting this work, to keep working on it until Dubai. So this is a context.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there are many other work streams within a supervisory body that has to be done at this COP, including sustainable development tools, which are tools or what you might say a standard, a project standard, which the supervisory body expect in term in relation to sustainability, namely sustainable development goals, so to say. It has to be in line with sustainable development agenda at the UN. And then there's also about the discussions around appeals and grievance mechanism. So these three things are the main task, so to say, which was given to the supervisory body for consideration at this COP. Mm-hmm. So this is like a little background information. So you can talk a little bit about how that process went over the years. Did it, you know?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me start with the punchline is that we're, this is a deja vu.
Yeah.
So, cause like the supervisory body had already the task to come up with these, the definition about removals.
Yeah.
And then provide a report on recommendation on removals.
Yeah.
Before they went to COP27 in Egypt.
Yeah.
In Egypt, at it became evident that, well, it's not good enough to indigenous people, civil society, and member states. Mm. And he said, well, you know what, take another year and do it over again.
Yeah.
So you would, I think what parties are now seeing is that, as what indigenous people have been saying all along, is that it's one thing to send it back, but like, what are the instructions?
Yeah.
And we said, send it back with high integrity, with a recommendation to provide high integrity recommendations.
Yeah.
What we got was, well, is a stakeholder input process, and they said it's fine with that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, now you see because that it wasn't, because it's not good enough.
Yeah.
So now, like, in an outcome of Dubai, is that it's now being sent back.
Yeah.
Not necessarily sent back. It's there's no decision.
Yeah.
There's no decision. So which is, to me, actually like a prompt. Like, all right, you need to do a better job.
Yeah.
So the entire year, like the supervisory body has been meeting. Like, and this, like I said, under loss and damage. Like, it's a lot of decisions are being made.
Yeah.
Outside of bond meeting.
Yeah.
And a COP.
Yeah.
The good thing is that the supervisory body regularly meets in Bonn, but also met in Singapore last year as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of work going back and forth, but it's so there's two things that the supervisory body need to do for COP, which is, all right, provide recommendations on methodologies and
removals.
So for these people, it's like, hold on, well, removals, that's, it's like you're dealing, you're trying to sit on a chair of the creator in a way, like by technically suggesting geoengineering in a way. So there needs to be like proper guidelines in terms of and making sure that whenever you do implement these technologies on the lands of territories of indigenous peoples, that there's human rights safeguards involved.
Yeah.
You know, so we've been working on that for the entire year and doing like input because of that came out of Egypt, and then there was there's two recommendations that need to be decided to upon by the CMA by COP, but like you said, like the supervisory body also needed to do some work on the sending project standard. If you do go to do this project, what is the checklist? That's for these people, super important that is one of the items on the checklist is, right, you respect the rights of indigenous people, or you ensure participation of indigenous people.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is definitely appeals and grievance mechanism.
Yeah.
So you do, so sustainable development tool is for prevention of human rights violations, and appeals and grievance mechanism is for to address them when they occur.
Yeah.
So it's, we've been working on that to provide input and mostly virtually submissions.
Yeah.
And now we get another year to go more in depth into what we think the supervisor should be doing in terms of shaping or designing these two things.
Yeah. And I kind of want to take a step back and look at, the participatory aspect of the supervisory body meeting and how can indigenous peoples contribute to their work. Because, as you mentioned, there are meetings, few meetings, four meetings, I believe, throughout the year of the supervisory mm-hmm. body. And observers are allowed to participate in it, or observe, basically, the meeting. And there's a little bit of time for stakeholder engagement.
At the very end.
Mm-hmm. But also observers nowadays are also allowed to make submissions. Tell me a little bit about this process and how can that be used strategically? Are Indigenous peoples using this opportunity strategically? And if so, what is?
Well, we have to, because we not just Indigenous people, yeah. but like civil society as well, yeah. and some of the member states who helped yeah. us as well,
yeah.
to really ensure that there is a sustainable development yeah. tool, there's a yeah. project standard, yeah. and that there is an appeals and grievance yeah. mechanism. We advocated for it, yeah. so it's one thing to yell yeah. like this is what yeah. we want, and yeah. the second thing is like, all right, when they
yeah.
put the ball in your court, yeah. like, how do you want to see it?
Yeah.
How do you want it to be developed?
Yeah.
And so in terms of how to do that is, yeah, with this input process, mm. Yeah, you can go to these meetings. However, yeah. like most of these meetings are like, yeah, we're in a different room,
yeah.
Watching it via web stream.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then at the end of it, yeah, there's 1 hour stakeholder interaction. Mm. Or when they have a coffee break, you walk down and you have yeah. a coffee break with them. So yeah. that's in terms of engagement.
Yeah.
But like the bulk of the work is through inputs,
yeah.
is providing input. And so that's what we're yeah. trying to do is that have these regular meetings, our Zoom calls, yeah. and all right, so this is yeah. a deadline for yeah. this such and yeah. such about participation.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a deadline on mm-hmm. grievance. Let's work on it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's their way of working, and it's something that we're trying to.
Is it a numbers game? The more input,
well,
the better.
I think so, yeah. Because they still see us as observers.
Yeah.
So even though we say like we're a caucus, they don't understand that we're a caucus.
Right.
They know that there's a lot of local communities and Indigenous people platform.
Yeah.
So that is like that's seen as an authority in a way, mm-hmm. Whereas the caucus is the authority.
Yeah.
When it comes to Indigenous peoples yeah. in at the climate context.
Yeah. yeah.
The so in a way that's well what you now see is it can be helpful to make use of the numbers game so yeah. that yeah you do a caucus so that's what I would like to do like so the coming months is I work on this submission and then
yeah.
what work on like collectively but like you provide one caucus submission and then in these people's and civil society and whoever else can use that as a basis for their own
yeah.
submission so that they can send it. For that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Because I remember seeing the submission for removal guidance, mm-hmm. and there were over 400 submissions.
Yeah,
and most of them came from
private sectors
and startups, which have right. vested interest in this particular market.
Absolutely.
And it, of course, it's their right to do so as observers and stakeholders. But obviously there was less input from, say, experts, like academic experts and civil society who should also have a lot of say in how certain technical aspects are defined and who has also interest in how on the procedural aspects of safeguards and say appeals and grievance mechanism or whatever. Human rights concerns that they have with this particular market.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not there was no decision on Article 6.4 and 6.2. And what does it really mean? Because there's no instruction either.
No. So it basically is that there's no decision. So yeah. it's in a way that's rule 16 so yeah. like you have another yeah. year to try again next year
yeah.
that's basically what it is
but the supervisory body can continue doing its work or
definitely supervisory body yeah. and on a 6.2 like yeah. you'll have definitely negotiations yeah. and bond you can
because they still
that.
Have a mandate
there's no final whistle
yeah.
you know
yeah.
like so
yeah.
you have to keep on negotiating
yeah, yeah.
Definitely on 6.2 and bond and the yeah. 6.4 well it is an established meeting
yeah.
Or a constituent body, so yeah. it's it'll meet in February.
Yeah.
And you can bet that they'll assess, all right, how do we make sure that we won't have another year delay?
Yeah.
In after Baku.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So should we move on to 6.8?
Sure.
Yeah. So 6.8 is getting really interesting. Well, at least it's arousing some interest amongst the caucus members.
Right. Well,
why is that?
Oh, first of all, like, it's something that I find interesting is that 6.8 is not a false solution.
Right.
So like Article 6 is being like painted as a false solution.
Yeah.
And 6.2, 6.4, there's a market mechanism.
Yeah.
6.8 is called a non-market mechanism because it supposedly doesn't have any market elements in there.
Mm.
But like if you look at the intent of it, like, and Bolivia was one of the countries that really pushed for it, it is actually like the true objective of Article 6, which is international cooperation, to help each other reduce meeting their NDCs and to reduce carbon emissions. Mm. So I think the interest in there is that is there's no market involved, and it is a way for these people to showcase how their lifestyles, their cultures, and everything else. Like basically, what we've been asking for and screaming at the COP for years, like listen to us and everything else. Mm. Well, we got the platform, but that doesn't really like. Mm. That doesn't get enough interest from parties.
Right.
6.8 is actually a part of this whole Paris rulebook, Paris Agreement.
Yeah.
So, 6.8 is a way for indigenous peoples, and I think that's why there's an interest.
Yeah.
Is when you talk about, for example, the just transition that indigenous peoples are envisioning, you can bring it under 6.8. All your ideas on what you've been doing in terms of like reducing carbon emissions, you can bring it under 6.8.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I think like it's super interesting for these peoples, more in these peoples right now like this light bulb moment, so that's what 6.8 is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I overall I think 6.8 has received less attention compared to 6.4 market mechanism.
Absolutely, yeah.
And perhaps the same reason with the loss and damage in Santiago, in the sense that there's no money.
There's not a lot of money in a
no-market approach. It's the whole idea is not putting price on things.
Yeah.
Not putting price on carbon or trees or hydroelectric generation, and let alone not trade with that assumption. So let's say, well, Article 6.8 has been. Are still kind of at its infancy in terms of trying to understand what it exactly is.
Well, first of all, they're trying to figure out what a non-market approach
is.
Right. You know, so that's these meetings and these workshops, spin-off groups, trying to figure out, well, what is a non-market approach?
Yeah.
So I think that is already a win for indigenous peoples in Dubai.
Yeah.
It's not as tangible as funding on loss and damage, whatever.
Yeah.
But the interesting is that now you actually like first they were focusing on like non-market approaches, everything but 6.2 and 6.4.
Right.
Now these people like showing actually like hold on, like no, this is what a non-market approach can be. So like you have them focusing on one definition of it, you have like two.
Yeah.
You know, so like it's yep, yeah, you have this Glasgow committee that's working on it.
Yeah.
So definitely the next couple of months, years actually, we can get more involved in the 6.8 and become actually participants in it.
Yeah. Because I actually quite enjoyed watching this negotiation where a lot of the developed countries were trying to not define, but provide some examples of non-market approach.
Yeah.
And how the developing countries have persistently push back on it because I think the developed countries are trying to frame certain understanding, right, of what the non-market mechanism should be about.
The thing is like there's an incentive for if you're a developed country, I can imagine, is that if you put it like some kind of like a placeholder or modality in there, that 6.8 approaches arrangements can be repackaged as a 6.4 arrangement.
Yeah.
And that's developing countries or just countries that are really focusing on environmental integrity. Yeah. Like, hold on, no, that's not what the
Yeah.
Objective is 6.8. Yeah. Objective is to international cooperation,
yeah,
reduce carbon emissions,
yeah,
with no incentive involved.
Yeah.
So you get to see the back and forth, yeah, going in a way. But you also, like, when you go into those meetings, you see, like, there's not as much of a conversation as at 6.8 than, yeah, at 6.4 and 6.2.
Right.
It's mostly because of the lack of understanding, I think,
yeah,
Of what a narrow market approach is.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's still in its infancy.
Yeah.
And
so like references to carbon pricing and nature-based solutions have been kind of removed.
Oh, thank, right, God, yes. And that is something that when you brought up earlier, is it quantity or quality?
Yeah.
Is there was a reference in there on non-market, yeah, nature-based solutions,
yeah,
to enhance non-market approaches.
Yeah.
And then there was some in brackets, yeah, non-Japanese people, some, yeah, local,
yeah,
knowledge.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, let's fight for Indian's, yeah, knowledge. Yeah. It's like, hold on. Like, the objective of the whole paragraph,
yeah,
it goes against, yeah, like what we're trying to do. Like, yeah, carbon pricing, for example, was another paragraph.
Yeah.
So it's like, you look at the objective of it, you zoom, yeah, out, you look at the objective. Yeah. All right, so, and then, my recommendation, take the whole paragraph on nature-based solutions out. And luckily, it got out as well,
yeah,
as well as on the reference to, yeah, the carbon pricing.
And so, yeah, okay, so 6.8 has been adopted, the text.
The text
has been adopted. So there is, right, there is a new mandate. So what does a new mandate mean for indigenous peoples? What can I do with the decision text?
Same thing, input. There's another call for input, yeah, on non-market approaches.
Yeah.
And I think that in Bonn, it will be very interesting for indigenous peoples to start participating,
yeah,
or preparing for it to participate, yeah, in that meeting.
Yeah.
What's giving a little bit more hands and feet,
yeah,
on what a non-market approach, yeah, is from an, yeah, Indigenous people perspective.
Yeah.
Definitely making use of the March deadline for the 6.8,
yeah,
input.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of work,
yeah,
ahead of us in,
yeah,
the first couple of months, actually.
Yeah.
So in that sense, when you look at,
yeah,
like the overall COP28,
yeah,
or focusing on Article, yeah, 6, is that it's like,
yeah,
check, check, check.
Yeah.
Like we have,
yeah,
achieved our objective.
Yeah.
For Article 6.
And looking back, you know, working as a team on Article 6, decisions adopted or not adopted were according to what has been initially agreed,
mm-hmm,
to strive for. But strategically speaking, you know, how you spend your time and resources at COP. Do you have any reflection? Do you have any improve?
There's always room for improvement.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, it's if you look at like the big enchilada at COP28, yeah, was, for example, the global stocktake.
Yeah.
You know, and it would have been super well for us if we actually, every negotiating stream, mm, was as diligent as Article 6, and then, like, all right, yeah, hold on. We also contribute to the global, yeah, stocktake conversation, because,
yeah,
what you can't do not achieve in, for example, in agriculture, mm, in the negotiating, mm, stream, is what you can achieve,
mm,
potentially in the global stocktake. Mm. No, so there's definitely something that we could be focusing more,
yeah,
on. Well, good thing is that global stocktake will be once every 5 years.
Yeah.
So we have we can try it again in another 5 years.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, for example, there's a reference to fossil fuels in, mm, there,
mm,
in the stocktake. Mm. However, there's also a reference to removals and technology. So,
yeah,
in a way, it's,
yeah,
if we were a little bit more organized, and then,
because I felt like, yeah, I felt like the approach of the caucus was quite, you know, siloed, as one might say. So different teams working on different work stream, but there's no cross kind of fertilization of ideas,
which goes actually against like the whole understanding of Indigenous people, or like what we claim as,
yeah,
you know, as like, yeah, we're holistic,
yeah,
approach to everything,
yeah,
you know. So,
yeah,
it's definitely something that we should be looking at,
yeah,
and there's a lot of cross-cutting things,
yeah,
so like, yeah, work streams, it,
yeah,
helps, and then again it helps,
yeah,
also not, so that's something that we need to definitely,
yeah,
need to be looking at,
yeah,
looking at the bad stock take, right?
You know, But were you generally happy with the team?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like depends on who shows up and there's work needs to be done and but also like I said, like those are people that show up to comp. However, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, like and that's super important. And but like my hope is actually is that that you have an Article 60 and you also like a similar team on agriculture, a similar team on all these other negotiating streams. I think that is something that we could be working towards, and then do some cross-cutting coordination. Absolutely,
All right. So should we look at the other individual streams before we move on to stock take? Any notable honorable mentions?
No. Well, agriculture got Rule 16.
Yeah.
There's a reference to Indigenous peoples in there.
Yeah.
So definitely that's something we can look at in terms of, in terms of working towards bond.
Yeah.
Global goal and adaptation. There were some references to Indigenous peoples.
Yeah.
Knowledge and everything else in there. So that's something we can should be working on. And then again, like it's something that Indigenous people as a caucus should be looking at, and like not the Article 16.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good to have some kind of like a baseline or understanding of like, well, and also having, the ability and also the opportunity to like, for other teams to like, all right, hey, I don't understand this. Could you help us out? You're pretty good at organizing an Article 6.
Yeah.
Can I just drop this with you?
Yeah.
Hear your thoughts on it, so that we can carry that into the negotiations.
Yeah, I really would like to see more cross collaboration on different negotiating agenda, because for example, like this whole issues around Indigenous and local knowledge that kind of popped up in different work stream, and nothing ever happens without a reason, right? So there has to be some level of coordination as to So how can different working group can work more strategically to push back some of the common concerns that are widespread between different work streams.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So how are we doing with time? Oh wow, that's a bit scary. I think we have like 5 more minutes.
Yeah, I've
more or less.
My flight is a little bit delayed. So
okay. How much?
30 minutes.
Oh, okay.
But doesn't mean that we're gonna talk for 30 minutes more.
No. Let's talk about maybe 15 minutes max.
Something like that. Yeah.
All right. So stock take. Tell me a little bit about what it is, first of all.
First of all, like super focused on Article 6 that we could not focus on Article 6 as well. Stock take as well.
Yeah.
But like in my understanding is that it's stock take is like, all right, how far have we come to implement or to get the goals of Paris?
Yeah.
You know, and so let's take a stock take of every negotiating stream and every aspect and let's make a package of, all right, this is what we need to do to meet to be able to take a good stock in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
So like Article 6 is, oh, no, not, not, sorry, not Article 6 in there, is in there, international cooperation.
Yeah.
Again, you know, so like the objective is international cooperation.
Yeah.
Agriculture is in there, loss and damage in there as well. Yeah. You know, so like it's like a medley of everything.
So then tell us, where are we in relation to Paris Agreement? Where are the humanity at?
I think the challenge is that it that also as well is a negotiation. So it's not a honest, holistic.
Yeah. That's right.
Appreciation of like, all right, so where are we? No, it's a negotiation.
Yeah.
So in a sense, in the basis, it's already like flawed.
Yeah.
You know, like it's. So you get the lowest common denominator, and obviously AOC is.
But let's say from Indigenous people's perspective, right? All the promises of Paris, including 1.5 and even the preamble paragraph about considering the respective obligations on different rights holders and you know and loss and damage and adaptation. Where do you think if indigenous peoples had a stock take?
If indigenous peoples had a stock take into how we did?
Yeah, how you did and how you know how well no in terms of what the parties have done.
Oh right.
Yeah.
Right. So I think you can kiss 1.5 goodbye.
Okay.
My honest opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah. Because it's already 1.1 according to some.
Yeah. Well.
Some analysis.
And again, you know, like is 1.5 the barometer for. Yeah.
And you can look outside and it's like 11 degrees in
right.
in December in Geneva. Like,
yeah. So, but then again, like, so I think, in all honesty, I think you can kiss 1.5 goodbye. Yeah. So the other barometer or like the measurement for meeting Paris is fossil fuels.
Yeah.
But 10 was phasing out. It's not even. But, and I think in the previous conference said like there's this, it goes from life support to flat line to, you know. So I think in terms of from phasing out to phasing down, I think that that also.
Because we keep saying, I think the first time I heard about life support was in Madrid. The 1.5 is on life support.
Yeah.
And the world hasn't gotten any better, and we haven't become more ambitious.
So, in that sense, if you look at it, like it's always, it's a negotiation, and then again, like it's something that we need to be aware of is that the stock take, but like the negotiations, but it's also that people need to be aware of is that COP is now a monster, and a huge monster. It's a whole new economy. Climate change is a new economy, and what you also see is that. Negotiations are no longer the enchilada. Mm. It's the taco.
Yeah.
Like the big enchilada is probably all these side meetings.
Yeah.
About pledges.
Yeah.
About like we commit to do this.
Yeah.
There's this whole investment fund on, I don't know, forest basins and all that stuff and
of technology. Fund,
technology, carbon technology, you know. So it's
like 30 billion. Like,
right.
It's like There's a money, $30 billion for mitigation.
$700 million on loss and damage fund.
Yeah.
And like billions on everything else.
Yeah.
You know, so on investment.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that's why I'm saying it's a whole new economy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's talk about indigenous people's rights and their implementation and its implementation within the COP since Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's not in the Paris Agreement specifically to say more participation for indigenous peoples specifically, right?
No.
In these processes inside of the COP and the SUBSTA and other venues.
Yeah.
But can you comment a little bit on, okay, it's been what, 8 years since Paris? Indigenous peoples at COP, has it gotten any more traction, attention, recognition, acknowledgement? And so
definitely. Yeah. It's not on spec. It's something that you get to like enforce yourself.
Yeah.
By claiming self-determination and engaging in negotiations about making ensuring participation not just a word but actually something that is actually respected. You know. So it's something that you actually. Do yourself. Mm. We have tools in there, you know. But like, it's up to you to decide. Like, all right, what are we gonna make from it?
Yeah.
Are we gonna make a toolkit, or are we going to make a whole treehouse, for example? You know. So it's incremental.
Yeah.
You know. So when it comes to participation, it's that. Yeah, you can do it like through. Decision texts, but also you can also do de facto participation by demonstrating that party should not be afraid of, yeah. of Indonesian peoples participating yeah. Yeah. in negotiations, and yeah. we can actually participate or mm. contribute to the whole conversation. So yeah, look, in all these years, it's platform helped definitely mm. as a, put a spotlight on Indonesian peoples, but it's also like, right, get out of the spotlight and also go into these dark places where negotiations are happening mm. behind the scenes and all that stuff. Mm. TC, supervisory body, GCF, whatever. Yeah, go into the into those meetings, and you kind of yeah, show your face mm. and put the pressure on. And aside from that, you also do like have these bilateral meetings as well.
It's quite, for me, one of the observations that I have is that the spots reserved for indigenous peoples have also increased, like quantitatively speaking,
right.
from Santiago Loss and Damage Fund and also the platform and yeah. an opportunity for platform facilitate the working group members to also be engaged with, mm-hmm. you know, and that and maybe compared to 8 years before Paris to Paris Agreement,
mm-hmm.
This whole kind of need or recognition or requirement of having indigenous peoples at the table in, let's say, non-negotiating bodies have also increased quite a lot.
Yeah.
In a way that hasn't been and so far, you know, there's this idea that we're indigenous people, I have to play a lot of catch up.
Mm-hmm.
So in the next 12 months until Baku, where, you know, indigenous peoples and civil societies alike are given the opportunity to work one more year on Article 6 and work with Article 6.8 and yeah. work with future guidelines for loss and damage and work with Santiago Network. What are the good things that indigenous people are doing so far that should be continued on? And what are the things that needs to be changed in order for indigenous people's advocacy to be more effective and more impactful leading up to Australia
I think,
and so on?
Yeah, better I've said a couple of times yeah. already, is that, yeah. that not relying on let me show up to Bonn yeah. or show up to Baku and yeah. then figure out what the hell I'm going to yeah. do. You know, so it's continue doing what we're already doing is preparing yeah. inputs, yeah. Coordination, having mm. meetings with member states, mm. Yeah, mm. between now and Bonn and between Bonn mm. and COP, you know, mm. so it's having a little bit more touch points with each other, but also yeah. with parties. Yeah. So that's something that we should be yeah. continuing.
Yeah.
That's something that I'm very much looking forward to, okay, you know,
yeah.
so like it's we're elevating.
Yeah.
It's increasing, incremental approach is increasing, so that's definitely like something
yeah.
that we're
yeah.
looking forward to and yeah. that I'm looking forward yeah. to doing.
Yeah. One more question.
All right.
So everybody's talking about Baku, but actually more people are talking about Brazil.
Yeah.
And some people are talking about what happens after Brazil.
Australia.
So like, we talked a little. We always talk about 1 year at a time. But what's your long term view? What should Indigenous peoples and other civil society advocates be thinking?
Yeah.
Into further future, right? Where things need to be prepared.
Right.
Quite.
Yeah,
strategically
I think a multi year plan would be yeah. super helpful. Or like
yeah.
a multi not plan, but like an idea.
Yeah.
Like, so this is what we want to achieve in Australia
yeah.
because maybe something that you want to do for AOCs
yeah.
or for
yeah.
laws or for Pacific Small Island Development
mm.
States
mm.
or that's also beneficial for them
yeah.
as well as Indigenous people. So
yeah.
if you put that as a mark on your horizon,
mm.
you can like have like the next two COPs
mm.
or the next 2 years actually you start preparing for that
mm.
So that instead of. Which I think is much better if you, instead of dropping a hammer on parties in Baku on,
yeah.
for example, like rights of Indigenous peoples.
Mm.
Like, you know, we want to have a strong decision on rights of Indigenous peoples, for example,
mm.
that goes beyond PP11.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like, first of all, like, I don't think Baku is the right cup residency to do it.
Yeah.
Maybe Brazil.
Yeah.
But you can definitely work between now and Brazil. But you also know that Australia is coming up.
Yeah.
So if you put the, if you want to have something substantial in Australia, it might be an idea to start working on it, like, and subtly but significantly.
Yeah.
Create some seeds.
Yeah.
Within the next two cups, actually, to so that you can. Get something out of Australia, and who knows what the next cup will be.
All right.
After Australia.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Cool. I think we covered the.
Yeah, I think that's what's next. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And we are now at the airport in Geneva. And
right.
Yeah. Right. Someone's heading out for New Year, and someone is not. So.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Nope. That's it.
Yeah.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year. Yeah.
My friends, I hope you enjoyed this. Please consider to subscribe, to comment, and to share this video on your socials.